Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Shohei Ohtani and the Los Angeles Dodgers World Series bound in his first year in Dodger blue could not have worked out better for the Dodgers, and he hasn't even started pitching yet. So we'll get to some baseball this hour. Not only the Dodgers eliminating the New York Mets in the NLCS to win the pennant at home, so in Chavez Ravine, for the first time since 1988. What a blessing and what a boost for those Dodgers faithful, but also the walk-off. Well, it wasn't a walk-off. This time wasn't a walk-off. The spectacular moment for the New York Yankees, the opportunity for them to get back to the World Series for the first time in 15 years. It may not feel that long, but in such dramatic fashion, where it's a home run to tie it and then another massive home run in extra innings to propel them forward. And you've got the top two teams in Major League Baseball that will meet on this biggest stage with MVPs and star power galore. But that doesn't start until Friday. We have still got a lot to talk about when it comes to the NFL. We'll have to work in college football this week because we won't get to it. The WNBA championship belongs to the Liberty. Yeah, it was a brisk pace for the weekend in sports. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. On Thursday night into Friday, we always put up the Game of the Week poll, and we carry it through the weekend. This poll got more responses than any so far in the NFL season, and 45% of you pointed to Lions and Vikings as the top game of the week, the After Hours game of the week, and it did not disappoint. The Vikings lose their first game of the season, but not before they jump out to a 10-0 lead and then grab the lead late in this game in what was a fourth quarter of many twists and turns. And we'll go through some of the highlights and the reaction from the locker rooms a little bit later on. But we're pleased to welcome Luke Braun, who has Locked On Vikings, a daily podcast, and has joined us before, but most recently going back to the Vikings draft pick of J.J. McCarthy. So there's a lot that's happened since we talked to Luke about this team. And here they are at 5-1 among the best teams in the NFL. So Luke, thinking about this game in particular in Minneapolis, what made the difference in what was a 2-point affair?
That's the thing about these close games that, you know, end up 31-29, right? It could be anything. You could point to anything. You could point to a ref call. You could point to a Jonathan Grenard strip sack that bounced right back to Jared Goff. Well, if you get a different bounce there, maybe you recover that one and there's field position and it's different. You know, if they get the two-point conversion at the end, they score on a scoop-and-score fumble to go up 29-28. They go for two because being up two is worth nothing, right? They don't get the two-point conversion. Once they do that, then it's tied at the end of regulation. We go to overtime. Be a totally different game. But I think that in those situations, you could say anything and probably be right, but it all kind of diminishes. You know, if everything decided the game, then nothing did. So I like to look at the thing that had the most impact on the Vikings, and that is there are holes in their coverage when they blitz that if you pick up the blitz, you're getting an explosive. And it kind of doesn't matter if you need to use eight players to pick up the blitz. You can do that. Leave everybody in protection, run a two-man route, and it's getting open because that coverage is so porous on the back end. And I think that's a bigger problem than a lot of Vikings fans are willing to admit right now. Brian Flores is going to have to really work to figure out. It's been a thorn in his side since last December.
When you think about these two teams, one had sky-high expectations coming into the season. One had very low expectations. So together on the field, if you use the Lions as a gauge for the Vikings, how would you evaluate the first 7 weeks of their season?
A million times better than I ever thought it was going to be. I mean, I went and talked to you and said, yeah, I'm happy if these guys win five at all, let alone the first five in a row. Look at what they were going in with. They were running in with old, you know, cornerbacks past their prime, a defense made of a bunch of nobodies. Sam Darnold was going to start the entire season. There was no chance of a rookie coming in and giving you a flash because then J.J. McCarthy got hurt. And it felt like it was going to be a transition year. And I was even all right with that. You know, if we're coming off the Kirk Cousins thing. He's got a $25 million dead cap hit. It was supposed to be a year where we're kind of transitioning out of Kirk and into the new thing. And yeah, I expected a lot more growing pains than I have seen so far. But you just rolled double sixes on everything that you tried. You had Sam Darnold working out great. Those corners have all made great plays all year long. Brian Flores' defense, is it going to be solved? Or is he going to come in with, you know, a couple new wrinkles that frustrate quarterbacks even more? Well, it's very much the latter. And until this game against the Lions played it great. So all these different things have all kind of come up Vikings, and sure enough, they're 5-1, but they're getting great play out of guys like Andrew Van Ginkle. You don't think about Andrew Van Ginkle. Nobody thought about him before this season, but now they are. He's got two pick sixes on the year. He's an edge rusher. So those kinds of performances have led this team to 5-1, but I'll tell you, this game against the Lions, it might be the first of three, and it felt like a playoff game. It felt like two really good teams with players that make plays throwing haymakers at each other, and the Lions got the last one. It didn't feel like one really good team and one sort of fake team, and you know the fake team was barely struggling to keep up, and maybe they made it a game off of some stupid stuff. It was two evenly matched teams, heavyweight fighters throwing right hooks.
We had the Vikings go up 10-0, and then 21 points in a row for the Lions, and then the swing backward for Minnesota as the Vikings right. take the lead, and it turns out to be a fumble recovery for a touchdown that puts them in front, and you mentioned the two-point conversion, but why such a roller coaster ride?
That's how it goes sometimes. It's the NFL. You get some crazy games, but you also have two hyper-aggressive coaches. I think for as long as Kevin O'Connell and Dan Campbell are in their seats, every Vikings-Lions game is going to be like this. And they all have been.
Nice.
They've all been buck wild. Because Dan Campbell, we know how aggressive he is on fourth downs and crazy decisions that he makes and what he did in the Cowboys game. He has no reverence for your traditions or your decorum. He is going to do what he is going to do, and he loves to sort of break that mold. And that's a big part of why the Lions are successful. O'Connell and Flores on the other side of the ball embrace an aggressive mentality. They're all about aggression. And they talk about it too. We want to stay aggressive. They're going to be up three scores throwing shot plays. And sometimes that lets the other team back in because you go three and out really fast. So you got these two very aggressive coaches. Most of the time, if one team takes a 10-point lead, they're going to start to try to calm the game down and start to shorten it and really try to, you know, maximize. If you get a lead in or even going in, you know, an 11-point lead on the other side, most teams are going to try to play a little bit more conservative, you know, just trade baskets for the rest of the game. Not these guys. No. So they are going to go for everything. They're going to continue to take risks, even to the point where the only way you lose is to take a risk. They're still going to do it because they're all insane and we all benefit as fans. But the answer to that question is aggression.
Insider and podcast host Luke Braun, Locked On Vikings, and here with us after hours with Amy Lawrence in the wake of the Vikings' first loss of the season. So we're talking about this game as a potential gauge just to see where they are and how they measure up against one of the best in the conference. But how much staying power do they have now that we've seen them against the Lions?
Well, down to down, it looks like they can go toe-to-toe with anybody in the league. I mean, they stopped up that Lions run game. That was the worst Lions rushing output that I think they've had so far this year from an efficiency standpoint. And most of their good efficiency is buoyed by like a couple of big runs. And the rest of it was pretty stopped up. So they did a good job against the Lions run game that has absolutely just torched everybody, just gashed everybody else. You know, they were able to move the ball on the Lions on a pretty celebrated Lions defense. They were able to generate explosives. Toe-to-toe is the phrase that keeps coming to mind. They looked like they could be evenly matched, but for one schematic problem, Ben Johnson having the cipher to translate the Flores defense and take the Flores defense away from the chaotic places it wants to be and then just kind of hit the same concepts over and over and over because they just brought a whole bunch of beaters and cooked them. From a talent perspective, from a down-to-down perspective, like a neutral, you know, well, if the Lions played this team and then the Vikings played this team, they looked close enough. And that's kind of why I say, you know, this series might come down to a third matchup. And that might be the way that these two teams are remembered. It's going to be decided by that one, not this one.
What have you seen from Sam Darnold in being a part of their success early on?
I mean, it's been crucial that he has been a safer Sam Darnold, a more grown-up Sam Darnold. And I even talked with you about this last time that that's supposed to be the deal, but I was very like, well, I'll believe that when I see it, right? Well, we've seen it, and now I believe it. The moment does get to him sometimes. He does kind of slide back into those over-aggressive habits. But hey, over-aggressive habits, look at who his coach is. We all love that here. So like, they're not even that mad about it. But sometimes you'll get those kind of Darnold-y turnovers. The way I would look at it is you're going to play a game against the Vikings. Darnold is probably good for two or three turnover-worthy plays. And you got to capitalize on those, right? Can't drop the picks. But he's good for like he's just going to throw you a dumb one. At some point in the game, you get that gift. That's something. But in return, he can make every throw at every level of the field. You have to defend every blade of grass. For probably three quarters of every game, he's been great about being on time and in rhythm. And he's aggressive. And he's very opportunistic. One of the best moments for him this year came against San Francisco, where he threw a back shoulder ball to Jalen Naylor that wasn't how that throw was supposed to go at all. I talked about it after the game. It was supposed to be this kind of rainbowy drop over the bucket if you were going to throw that route. But because of the way he saw the linebacker open up, he realized that it was going to be there, but only if he threw it fast and only if he placed it in that specific spot and only if he trusted his wide receiver to make that. It was a very improv-y move, but it was opportunistic. He saw one defender make one little tiny mistake with his leverage, and then said, I got it. Okay, I have this opportunity, and now I'm going to go do all these crazy things I need to do to seize it. That kind of mentality has made, you know, these games kind of snowball sometimes, like against the Texans and against the Packers before they clawed their way back in, where you make one little mistake, but you're already down 10 to nothing. Suddenly it feels like, you know, the avalanche is coming, and they've been able to really demoralize a couple teams that way. And that's Darnold doing a lot of that.
Is there enough work for Justin Jefferson to keep him happy? Is he getting used enough?
You know what? I bet he has been happy five times this year and not happy one time this year. For him, sometimes he will have to be a decoy. And if you have somebody like Jordan Addison or like TJ Hawkinson, whose return is imminent, to sort of be that next option that can do that. But the offense is very much still designed, and it should be designed, to go through Justin Jefferson. He's the best player, right? So it's a lot more of other guys setting him up and doing the best there. But I mean, he had relatively quiet days. this season, and you're never going to hear of people, but Jefferson's not that kind of receiver where he cares a bunch about his targets and his stats. He wants to win. He's hyper-competitive, and he wants to make plays, but he's very much like about his teammates too. He will gas you up. If he has 15 yards, but Jordan Addison has 102 touchdowns, he's going to be gassed. You're going to pick up Jordan Addison by his hips and lift him up like he's at the bow of the Titanic. He'll do that. So I don't think keeping Justin Jefferson happy is any bit of a concern. He's a goofball that loves to win games. You want to keep him happy, stay in the win column.
From Locked On Vikings, Luke Braun with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence. I personally love the addition of Aaron Jones. I feel like it's one of the most significant moves of this previous offseason. And I know he's been dealing with a hamstring, but how do you like the fit so far?
Yeah, so he has this like hamstring hip. I'll call it a stinger. It's not like a hamstring strain like you usually hear when it's a hamstring thing, which is a much scarier injury. This is like a deep, maybe even a bone bruise. But he's been working through that. Short week this week, so we'll see how everything plays out. But he played the full game this week, and he's been vital. I cannot describe enough how much he has changed things. Last couple of years, the Vikings offensive line has been blocking up the runs reasonably well enough, and there have been lanes. But guys like Alexander Mattison, you know, Dalvin Cook's corpse, Ty Chandler in some spots, Cam Akers in some spots, just either haven't had the decisiveness or haven't had the physical burst to hit those holes. Aaron Jones has both of those. That's why he was so good in Green Bay for so long. He still has all of that. There's not like there was another thing. Hey, Aaron Jones is a little old. Has he lost a step? Nope. That one came up Vikings too. It's been a really important part of the Vikings success has been his ability to, again, punish those small mistakes. And that's what truly separates good teams from great teams. You know, against a good team, you can mess up a little bit and they'll maybe get a play on you, but it won't be backbreaking. Against a great team, and this is, you know, what Aaron Jones can do, your corner just leaks a little bit too far inside and then suddenly he's bouncing that thing to the edge and the Vikings are scoring.
Luke, of the four teams in the NFC who have 5 wins, and right now that's the most in the conference, 3 of them reside in the NFC North, which, again, a huge surprise. What stands out about the division?
I mean, it's the way it is, right? This division could totally send 4 teams to the playoffs. Because I remember looking at who else is going to make it in the wild card, right? You've got, like, what, 3-4 49ers. They're in actually real trouble over there with the Seahawks, I believe, leading that one pretty handily. Who else is it going to be? The Cowboys? What's it going to be?
Don't!
So I could see whoever wins the North, the other 3 teams being the 3 wildcard teams, could absolutely do that. But the other thing is, the NFC North has barely played itself. Vikings have played a couple games, and I don't think any other NFC North matchups have happened. So they're all going to beat each other up here in November, and we're going to really see which ones rise. But what makes me feel good as a Vikings fan is that a lot of the hardest games that are shared are now in the rear view for the Vikings. Vikings have already played the 49ers. They've already played the Texans. You know, now they've played one against the Packers, one against the Lions. So a lot of their toughest games are in the rear view. They get to just run through the bad parts of the AFC South after this, and like then the Rams and like whatever's left of the Cardinals by November. It's going to feel a little bit better versus if you look at what the Bears have coming, well, they have all those tough teams still left. So we'll see if they're able, you know, I think that there's a big test for the Bears when the schedule gets a little bit tougher. Like they're going to have a big test. And the Vikings kind of have already passed theirs, but it's a long season. One of these 4 teams is going to fall away and not make the playoffs. Don't know who it is yet. Could be the Vikings, could be the Bears, could be someone surprising. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, everybody's answering their questions with the right answers.
The NFL season to date has featured a ton of these types of surprises, which is always fun, right? Like, that's the whole deal about the NFL
every year
being a reality show. So if there's one other thing that jumps out that's kind of caught you off guard, what is it?
Oh, it's the Commanders. Jaden Daniels. Look, I had Jaden Daniels at the top of my QB list. Some of us knew. But even I didn't think he was going to come in and be this electric this fast. There were still, you know, developmental things, but he is not only playing explosive ball like he did in college with, you know, big go balls and a lot of rushing prowess, but he's not relying on it. And the Commanders are playing together as a team. They just dunk on a terrible team like the Panthers. That's what you expect a good team to do. I'm very excited about what the Commanders are doing. And I'm sick of seeing it being, you know, Cowboys, Eagles with maybe a Giants wild card in there. that's been the case for the NFC East for a long time. So I'm excited to have some new blood.
As we wrap up, Vikings fans have been through a lot. They've had some years in which their team was close and yet haven't been able to break through. Often they are willing to bail fairly quickly and say, okay, that's it. That fool's gold. Well, it's lost its shine. So what will it take to convince Vikings fans that this team is for real?
Well, so here's the thing, Amy. Vikings fans will tell you that they're bailing. But we'll see you all on Sunday. I don't believe any single one of you people. I'm done with this team. I'm going to go mow the lawn. I'm going to turn it off. Nah, you're back in 10 minutes. You can't turn it off. You can't look away what we have. So Vikings fans are here whether it's good or not. When the Vikings were 3-13, Vikings fans were still going to all the games, and they still all had their season tickets. That's the way it is. But to answer your question truly, to get the Vikings to believe, to be honest, I think if you aren't yet, you probably aren't going to. You probably are just one of those people that like can't let yourself believe in anything until the Vikings are literally holding up the Lombardi trophy, and even then you're worried it's going to get vacated. I think by beating the 49ers and Texans and Packers in succession, I mean, goodness, those were three of the top six teams in Super Bowl odds going into the season, and the Vikings swept through all of them. If that doesn't convince you that the Vikings are doing something, and I say that as somebody who you know, Amy, I was not convinced headed in. I had to be convinced. They had to show me something. But if that's not enough to show you, nothing is. And maybe that's just the kind of fan you are. And hey, there's no wrong way to be a football fan. You're valid. But I think you do have to ask yourself, what would it take if not that?
It's time to hop on board the Vikings bandwagon and follow the wild ride. And you can do it with Luke Braun at Luke Braun NFL. All the intel and the deets, the Locked On Vikings podcast. And I know that roller coaster of emotions is threaded all the way through. It's great to connect with you because it's going to be fun. Yeah, we're going to have to do this again as the Vikings navigate this strange new world. Thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you, Amy.
One of the great surprises of this NFL season, but I do wonder how many people watched what happened or just assume because the Vikings lost, maybe didn't watch at all. You just assume that because the Vikings lost, that must be the end of it. I think that's ridiculous. If you watch this game and they go toe-to-toe and the Vikings have the lead multiple times in it, just aren't able to close it out. They have far exceeded expectations, but that doesn't mean the run or the success is over. Now, I think the NFC North is settled in for the long haul with some battle-tested teams by the time we get through December. Great stuff with Luke Braun. We always turn to him when it comes to Vikings, along with a couple of the guys from the broadcast, so Paul Allen and Ben Lieber. But it's been a lot of fun to see some of these early surprises not flame out. So the Commanders either. That's been great. Although we worry about Jaden Daniels now and what's going to happen with him. He'll have more testing coming up on Monday. We're going to go ahead and look at the other team in action from the AFC North. After the break, the Packers and the Texans, another one of those games that we offered as a candidate for After Hours Game of the Week. And then baseball on the back end because the World Series is set to begin on Friday. Glad to have you with us at A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, we'll get that Monday MVP poll up very soon. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Snap to Jordan Love. Rush on. He fires middle. Whoa. Hands up. Diving. What a ball.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell.
In a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Touchdown! A tracer from Jordan Love. Wow! Back line of the end zone. And the Packers take the lead.
Mixon in the backfield, Stroud in the gun, second down, and less than a yard inside the two. CJ hands off to Joe, running to the left. Joe across the goal line, touchdown, Houston. Joe Mixon for 6.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Texans and Packers, another one of those games featuring teams with winning records week 7 in the NFL. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Actually, this game might not have been as competitive or as close If not for a pair of first half interceptions from Jordan Love, they made life more difficult for the Packers at Lambeau Field. And so 10 points off turnovers for the Texans in the first half. But then you get to the second quarter, and it is all gas, no brakes. 30 points between these two teams combined. And you hear the Tucker Kraft touchdown catch from Jordan Love. He also had a 30-yard dart to Dontavian Wicks. And then Joe Mixon, another big game coming back from injury. A pair of rushing touchdowns. And the Houston Texans had a 19-14 lead at the break. Now, the second half, little bit different, not quite the same offensive prowess as what we got in the second quarter. There were gobs of punts in the second half. In fact, 7 between Green Bay and Houston. But there were also some high water marks. And in the second half, seeing Jordan Love settle in with his offense and getting down the field for an opportunity to go ahead.
Takes the snap, looks and waits. Pump fakes again, dumps it off over the middle. He's got Jacobs cutting it back to the end zone for his first career touchdown reception. Josh Jacobs.
That's Wayne Larrivee on Packers radio, and he had 5 carries on that drive as well. So we'll call that the Josh Jacobs drive along with the receiving touchdown. But even after falling behind, the Texans are able to regain the edge. They have their own 6.5-minute scoring drive, though it results in a field goal, but it's lots of Joe Mixon and Kaimi Fairbairn, who has the easy 35-yard kick. These days, that's not even qualifying for a chip shot. It's less than a chip shot. It's easier than a chip shot. His kickers are routinely making boots now that are 50-plus and even trying 60-plus yarders. What has happened to the NFL? You know, kickers are people, too. So with under 2 minutes to go, Green Bay is working on its last opportunity, picking up 3 first downs to set up a newcomer with time running out.
And here's the snap, low snap, placement made, kick to the upright, and it is gone!
Yes!
It is gone!
Yes!
It is gone! The Green Bay Packers have won! Brandon McManus, 45-yard field goal. Welcome to Green Bay!
Quite the welcome at Lambeau Field, where he makes a game-winning kick from 45 yards out, and you can hear the noise, the din, the commotion behind that call from Wayne Larrivee on Packers radio. So as for the Packers, they're now 5-2 despite the 3 turnovers. Jordan Love goes 24 of 33, has the 2 early interceptions, but the 3 touchdowns and the last drive that shows you what the Pack is capable of.
Mindset right there is always go win the game. You know, it's a 2-minute drive. We need a field goal. We know what we need to do. So the mindset is just go win the game. You know, it's kind of coming down to us. Defense got a great stop, only getting them a field goal right there. So we knew what it was. It was just go win the game.
Got to give the Texans a ton of credit. I know they were shorthanded defensively today, and they absolutely kicked our ass. But I thought, conversely, I thought our defense played outstanding. And then, we knew we were going to take some shots. That's a really good football team. Definitely well coached.
Matt LaFleur giving credit to D'Amico Ryans and the Houston Texans. But yeah, a tough day for CJ Stroud. It was a great day for Joe Mixon. He had plenty of room to run, over 100 yards, a couple of touchdowns. But Stroud, 10 of 21, he got sacked 4 times, ended up getting hit another 7 times. And so it was a mixed bag when it came to the offense.
You know, a lot of things didn't go right offensively. We just really didn't get in the rhythm early. Missed some ops. Thought we ran the ball really well, but just weren't clicking in the passing game and, you know, just couldn't find our rhythm.
We had opportunities here to finish this game. We had our hands on 2 balls there at the end, like ball was tipped up. You know, we come down and make a play there. You know, it's a completely different feeling right now.
The Texans are still on top of the AFC South. And I did love this game. I'm big into gauges, big into measuring sticks, big into facing adversity and meeting other teams that are willing to go pound for pound against you. And this was a great dogfight between the Texans and the Packers. Green Bay had to recover from earlier giving up 10 points on its own mistake. So the Texans able to capitalize there. They were close to 150 yards in rushing. So there are a lot of things that they did well. But the Packers defense has been another one of those surprises this season. Funny how many of them are coming from the NFC North. So here's what it looks like. And I just talked about this with Luke Braun. Of the four teams in the NFC who have five wins, and right now that's the most wins in the conference, four of them. You've got the Commanders that are 5-2. All of the others come from the North. The Lions, the Vikings, the Packers, all with five wins. Now, the Buccaneers can join them. They're part of that doubleheader on Monday night. In fact, it's a weird start times. Don't ask me. It's a different straddled start time. So it's 8:15 Eastern time. So 8:15 in Tampa. It's the Ravens and it's the Buccaneers. And then 45 minutes later in the desert, it's the Chargers and it's the Cardinals. So instead of having an earlier game that starts at 7:30 Eastern or something along those lines like we had a few weeks ago, you've got the early start time being in Tampa with the Ravens. And actually, both the Ravens and the Bucs can move to 5-2. But when we're talking about the NFC, the Bucs can join those other teams at 5-2, and that would be the best record in this division, or the best, I should say, the most wins in this division because we've had a couple of buys in there. And so the Lions and Vikings, they're right now just 5-1. But wow, what an incredible start for this NFC North division. And two of the great surprises, actually three of the great surprises coming out of the NFC to date. All right, straight ahead, we're getting to a little bit of baseball because we had some dramatic moments. The stuff that movie scripts are made of for the New York Yankees. And as much as people love to hate the Yankees, and they're talked about a lot, fact is, they haven't been to a World Series in 15 years. In 2009 was the last time we saw them. And so for these guys on this team, the guys, especially the homegrown Yankees, you're talking about guys who haven't been there before. And even some of the other free agents, it's no wonder they're so thrilled. The expectations are so high for the Pinstripes every single year that it's rare they're going to achieve what they set out to achieve. But this is their first opportunity in the Fall Classic in 15 years, and they will take on the Dodgers. So no Subway Series. Instead, it's a little bit of East versus a West. You're either going to be all in or you're going to be grumbling and complaining and still watching because of the star power in this World Series. At A-Law Radio is where you can find me online, also on our Facebook page. Good to have you with us. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash.
This report is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your home and auto. Save when you bundle. Get a quote at progressive.com. Let's begin with Game 6 of the National League Championship Series.
The 34th pitch from Kodai Senga. Kike takes it the other way into right field. Here comes Edmund. Here comes the throw. It's going to third. Edmund scores. Double digits for the Dodgers.
Steven Nelson on Dodgers Radio. The Dodgers are National League champions. They beat the Mets in Game 6, 10-5. Win the series 4-2. The NLCS MVP, Tommy Edmund, 2-for-5 with 4 RBI, including a 2-run homer. It'll be the Dodgers and Yankees in the World Series starting on Friday night at Dodgers Stadium. Now to the NFL, the Sunday night game, the Steelers beat the Jets 37-15. Russell Wilson threw for 264 yards and 2 touchdowns. Najee Harris rushed 21 times for 102 yards and a touchdown. Elsewhere, the Chiefs over the Niners, 28-18. Commanders 40, Panthers 7. Rams beat the Raiders, 20-15. Eagles 28, Giants 3. The Lions over the Vikings, 31-29. Colts 16, Dolphins 10. Packers beat the Texans, 24-22. Bengals 21, Browns 14. The Bills over the Titans, 34-10. The Seahawks top the Falcons, 34-24. And the Jaguars over the Patriots in London, 32-16. The New York Liberty are WNBA champions for the first time in franchise history. They win Game 5, beat Minnesota In overtime, 67-62, Jonquel Jones was named WNBA Finals MVP.
I could never dream of this. I mean, y'all know my story. Y'all know many times I've been denied it, but it was delayed. That's all it was, and I'm so happy to do it here.
Jones, courtesy of ESPN. NHL wins for the Kings, Avalanche, and Jets. Joey Logano wins the NASCAR race at Las Vegas. I'm Peter Schwartz.
Hey, like us on Facebook. Our handle is INF Sportsnet. That's INF Sportsnet for our Facebook page. This is the Infinity Sports Network.
Another 1-2 pitch. Edmund swings and pulls it to left field. That ball will get down and get all the way to the corner. Ohtani's in. Teoscar being waved around. Tommy Edmund one more time. A 2-run double for Edmund. And the Dodgers hop in front in game 6. Teo takes a small lead. Another 1-2 pitch. Edmund swings. It's a high fly ball. Left field and deep. Nimmo is back on the warning track. At the wall. Go! Sends Dodger Stadium into a frenzy.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The LA Dodgers get forced back to their own stadium to play a game 6 of this National League Championship Series, unable to close it out against the Mets earlier in the weekend, and so they get a show. Fireworks all around at Dodger Stadium. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, Steven Nelson with the calls on Dodgers Radio. And what about Tommy Edman? Another one of those midseason acquisitions. Late July, he gets traded from St. Louis, who was divesting itself of pieces, to the Dodgers. And he plays a huge role in the Dodgers reaching the World Series for the 22nd time in franchise history. But he was not alone. There was production from up and down the lineup for LA on Sunday night.
There are two outs in the bottom of the third. The pitch. Smith cracks the ball in the air, center field. Drifting back, Taylor. He's at the wall. It's gone! It's out of here! Into the netting in front of the batter's eye. Will Smith breaks through. Another 3-2 pitch. Shohei swings. Sends one to center field. Here comes Taylor. And he dives. Can't get it. Gets underneath his glove. Green light for Smith. He's coming around third. And he scores without a play. Shohei Ohtani with an RBI base hit. Makes it 7-3 Dodgers.
Dodgers able to score a couple in the first inning after they'd given up the first run of the game to the New York Mets. And this was an error by the Dodgers. In the infield, yet another moment in which the Mets capitalize and the Dodgers make a mistake. And so they're already behind the eight ball after the top of the first. But they come back with two runs in the bottom, four runs in the third, another run in the sixth, three more in the eighth, just to make sure this one doesn't get away. And Shohei Ohtani, he chips in another RBI hit. That's 18 of 22 for him with runners in scoring position. What a run to be able to chip in the way that he has. And I know a lot was made of him not producing without anyone on base. He did have a couple of home runs, solo shot included in there. So that kind of broke the streak. But 18 of 22 with runners in scoring position. And now the Dodgers in Ohtani's first season are headed to the World Series. The way that the Dodgers did this, it really underscores how it was all hands on deck. And I know the hitting is what it is. It can be gaudy. There can be a lot of big hits, a lot of home runs, and up and down the lineup they were able to produce through the course of this series. Even Chris Taylor with a couple of hits and a run in this clinching game 6. But what I will forever be impressed with, the pitching. This was a bullpen start in a closeout game. The Dodgers don't have a starter to put on the mound. In a closeout game, the Dodgers have to send a reliever, one of their best relievers, but Michael Kopech, who's been doing relieving duties, hold duties. He's been coming in to make sure that the Dodgers don't have these big innings where their opponents are able to break the dam open, if you will. Kopech's job has been a completely different one until this game six. They use seven different arms in this game. Seven different arms. Again, a bullpen start in a clincher to send your team to the World Series, that's not normal. And yet the Dodgers have done it. Earlier in this playoffs, 33 consecutive scoreless innings. And again, we're talking about, what, three starters? Jack Flaherty, who has been hit or miss in the playoffs, he's been terrific, but he's also been torched. Walker Buehler, who came back this series and was able to come up with, it wasn't a win because it was too short, five innings, though, of terrific ball for him. This is a team that is making up the rules as it goes along. And that's one of the reasons why it's so impressive to me. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. It turns out that Tommy Edman is the NLCS MVP. Though I kind of feel like they could have gone unconventional and made it the bullpen. Blake Treinen, but really kind of a centerpiece of this particular game. Two innings pitched, four strikeouts. He does allow a run in the ninth, but he gets the save. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. It's unconventional, it's atypical, and guys are expected to fill roles that are not what they're used to. Though there has been plenty of offense when they needed it, and Dave Roberts is thrilled that they were able to get Edman in late summertime.
It's a crazy trajectory. I can't say enough about the front office being able to acquire him at the deadline. You know, what he can do for us on the field, in the clubhouse. It's just amazing. And, you know, I never imagined, you know, once we acquired him, he'd be hitting fourth in a postseason game.
You guys are just so good. After the way the season started, to end up in this situation today is crazy. Got an amazing team. They just welcomed me in with open arms, and can't wait to keep it going.
Part of Edman's interview after he wins the MVP on Fox. So the Dodgers were last in the World Series in 2020. That was the pandemic year in which they played at the new ballpark in Arlington against the Rays, able to win that series. Many people would tell you it doesn't count. It doesn't matter. It wasn't real. All right, you can say what you want. For the Dodgers, though, this time it's different because of the pitching issues. Oh, and finally, they get to clinch the pennant at home. Hasn't happened since the late 80s.
Each one is special, but this group of guys, man, I love these guys. It's fun coming to work each and every day. It's fun battling. I mean, it's just fun, man. It's really just fun being a Dodger.
Dave Roberts was in the clubhouse after this game, and he was raving about how this team cares more for each other than any team he's been a part of. Now, I know a lot of people will say that in the emotion, in the midst of a champagne celebration, this is the most fun I've ever had, and it's more recency bias, but also winning. It's a heady tonic. But he has pointed to the fact that this group, over and over, has fought through adversity, has overachieved, again, referring to the pitching, in large part because of the tight-knit group that they are.
When you get in a position that we were in against a division rival, against a very talented team at that point, it turns into a street fight. And it's, you know, lose and go home, or you just fight like heck. And I think that that's what got us over the top in the DS, and also what bled into the fact, you know, allowed us to finish these guys off in six games.
Dave Roberts and the Dodgers were trailing the Padres, remember, and had to force a game five by winning in San Diego. And then that winner-take-all game that was, well, it was something that I didn't expect, a 2-0 game in which the pitching was so good. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Lots of questions about the Mets, but mostly a wonderful ride for them after they were so terrible to start the season. Pete Alonso with his playoff pumpkin, and now has to think about free agency, though maybe not yet.
Right now I'm just kind of like shell-shocked that the season's over, because once you get on this like postseason run, you kind of don't really think that it's going to end ever, because like we've overcame so much and we performed really well in big spots, and you really kind of don't even have that in your mind. Like, I never really had anything else other than winning the World Series with this group in my mind. So I mean, I haven't really thought of that. I'm just kind of just more in shell shock that it's over.
I can't imagine that Steve Cohen, the newish owner of the New York Mets, doesn't make him an offer that would be really hard to refuse. Maybe not impossible, because he will have other suitors. But the way that the Mets were able to rally from being below 500 and all those games back to not just make the playoffs, but to make a run to game 6 of the NLCS, playoff pumpkin included. You might have to pay for the playoff pumpkin. Pete Alonso is likely to stay in New York. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.